Hello, good evening.
Oh my gosh.
Welcome to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Evan and I'm an alcoholic.
Evan.
Really scattered out tonight, man. Have to start putting out police tape. For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask those present to refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we are talking about steps 8 and 9. And we, on the panel, I'm going to start on paragraph page 76. And on the panel, we have Harmony and David tonight. So I'll just start off on the first paragraph on 76. Now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Harmony?
I'm Harmony. I'm an alcoholic.
Harmony.
I'm grateful to be here. Grateful to be sober. I should tell you a little bit about why I needed to make amends. I was pretty crazy when I was out there drinking. I didn't drink for very long. I got sober when I was 18. I probably my first drink was probably somewhere around 11, or maybe 12, 13 years old. I did not drink for a very long time at all. When I got sober and I made it to the 8th step, I had a long list of people that I had harmed, and there was a handful of things that I did on a regular basis. One of them was shoplifting. Another one was I create complete chaos in my home. I have 3 brothers and my parents, and also a handful of sports teams and friends that I definitely fit the definition of a tornado that ran through people's lives. And I when I came to AA, I did not really have any fear about step nine. After doing the fourth, I guess I didn't read ahead in the steps to see that I might have to make amends to people. So I didn't have any fear, and so therefore I didn't hold back at all on my fourth and fifth step, and I was really as thorough and honest as I could be at the time. And I had all of these people on that on my fourth step, and after I had done my fourth and fifth step, I had a ton of remorse. It was the first time ever in my life that I actually saw myself for how I was and the things that I did to people, and I really saw the thread of self-will, that it was Harmony's will and Harmony's fits and Harmony's character defects that would just cause so many troubles throughout my young life. And I really did not want that to happen anymore. I was over it. I wanted some change in that area. And I actually struggled more with being overly remorseful with the people that I was making amends to, more so than I did not recognizing my own defects. But the fourth step was, and the fifth step were definitely influential. And it was my sponsor who went through my eight-step list with me and helped me to define exactly what harms were. So,
go ahead. Thank you.
David Yulee, an alcoholic.
David.
I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous on a winning streak either. There was absolutely no aspect of my life that was normal. None. I've been a construction worker pretty much my whole life. I graduated from high school and went right into construction. I took my first drink and started a party scene pretty early. I was 13, right around 13 too. So, when we sat down, I was terrified on my way to my sponsor's house the day that we had set for me to go over there and start these steps. I was terrified. He lives about 10 minutes away from me, and I got about 5 minutes there, and I'm sweating. I'm shaking. I'm sweating. I'm shivering. I don't know, man. It was terrifying. And for the first half of the trip, I was psyching myself out. I wasn't going to go through with it. And then I got halfway there, and I'm like, what am I doing? I got to do this. Because I did not want to drink anymore. I was through with it. 34 years old when I got to the program, and I was done. Going through this, my list was very, very long too. There's a lot of the way that I took the steps. You know, one, two, and three were all ideas. It was prayer. Four was making the searching and fearless moral inventory. Five was action, then six was more prayer, seven was prayer, and then eight I did when I did number four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory. And like Harmony shared, there was a lot of things on my list that I had done from when I was a kid, not just as a teenager and adolescent, a lot of things. A couple things that have been haunting me my whole entire life, before, when I was in elementary school. And I sat down and, I made that list. And for the first time in my life, I hadn't been able to drink and suppress them feelings back down in my gut. And I was dealing with them face to face, and I was a mess, man. I'm sitting at that table, and I'm mad as hell, and I'm crying, and I don't know what to do, And I know that. And my sponsor is, he's encouraging me. He's like, man, look, and I feel it. I really want to do this. We get down to it. And next to everybody, we start with the family members first and then the friends and then this and that and the other, And my family next to it, he puts ASAP, ASAP, ASAP. And these are the amends that are to be made as soon as possible. As soon as I read the proper pages and get a idea about what I need to say to them, and then it's not about me, it's about them. For 34 years I've been out there, a tornado in their lives, and now I have to sit down and I have to apologize, and I got to sit there and I got to eat it no matter what they say. And I hate to apologize. I hate saying sorry. And now I have to do it. This is part of the program. And he reminded me. He made me read this last sentence over and over and over again because he could see the look in my eyes that I don't want to do it. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any length for victory over alcohol. And I'm like, yes, sir. He said, how bad do you want this? I said, I want it. He said, well, this is what you're going to do. And I said, absolutely. And I was talking to one of my buddies on the way over here. You know, my sponsor, he continuously pushed me in the right direction. He kicked me. Sometimes he had to kick me in the right direction, but he did. And I'm very thankful for that, you know, because I'm in a great place in life, you know. This program has given me my life back, and it made me it's let me be a part of something bigger, and I'm very grateful for that. But this definitely was very difficult at first.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of good than our talk of spiritual discoveries. Harmony?
So I was really grateful that I had found Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember the first time that I felt this wave of gratitude. I was about 9 months sober, and I had been working with this newcomer for a couple of weeks who went out and she just disappeared one day. And I had this overwhelming feeling that I was very lucky to be sober, and that the fact that I was sober was a total gift. And the willingness that I had and the people that came across my path at the times that were crucial was all, divinely inspired. And I was very, very much in love with Alcoholics Anonymous, but I also went through a bit of an evangelical phase. I think that Bill and Bob understood that when they were writing the big book, and I would have loved to go to all of my family members or anybody in question and talked about how wonderful Alcoholics Anonymous was, and you should get involved, like you have a drinking problem too. And I do think I said that to one of my best friends from high school. I'm fairly certain I did. That was not during an amends, but I did say that to her once. I had a bad habit of making everything about me, and also a bad habit of making things way too overly emotional and making other people uncomfortable in their life. This paragraph is. Sums it up. Just say, don't be a weirdo. You know, don't show up to the people that you've got to make amends to and be a weirdo and make them so uncomfortable that they don't ever want to see you again. That's not making amends. And it's not that it's bad to talk about God. It's bad to make other people uncomfortable. And you shouldn't do it to make yourself feel better. And that I can't say that I was that tactful during the early years of my sobriety, but I can definitely see it now, and I can see it with the people that I have sponsored. And one of the examples in my own amends was I owed my brothers amends for being crazy. In one particular party, I had a party at my house, and we had a big wall mirror that sat up against the mirror, against a wall. It was humongous, probably like 8 feet tall, and it fell over on me. And my brothers had to clean me up, clean up the glass, and we also had people in and out of the house all night long. People kept coming, and I was like passed out in my bed, and my younger brothers were having to manage these people, these random people coming into the house while after, you know, I had been injured and this and mirror had fell on me. So anyway, there's a lot of things I had to make amends to my brothers too, but they were both very young, like under 20 years old and very awkward. And also, you know, like you going and talking to men, no offense, you don't want to just gush out a bunch of feelings on them right away. Like, especially younger men, talk about making them uncomfortable. So the conversation that I had to have with them was very brief and something along the lines of, hey, you know what, dude, I sucked. I'm going to try and do better. Okay. Okay, Harm. And that's pretty much how it went. There wasn't a lot of, I'm an AA now, and God has directed me to come to you and make amends for all the things that I did back, you know. And then what I did was went about trying to be a good sister and trying to be a fun person to be around. There have been some where I have talked about God, but that was in a situation where it was totally appropriate to do so. So that's all I have to share on that one.
Thank you.
You know, I was raised, my dad was a pastor my whole entire life. So there was a lot of church going on. Not that I was doing a lot of church, but there was a lot of church going on. Obviously, I'm sitting here in Rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but... So, you know, I was raised around that kind of stuff. You know, my mom was brought up. She went to Catholic school, kindergarten through high school, and then went to a religious college and all this and that and the other. And so there was a whole lot of that going on. So, you know, after I did sober up, you know, this part down here, it says, we need not, probably should not emphasize a spiritual feature on our first approach. You know, I had been doing some very unspiritual things for a whole lot of years, and there was no way that I was going to talk about, I was going to go to mom or dad or my sister on some spiritual mountaintop and talk about, I'm sober now, you know, because it just, that's not, you know, that wasn't the right thing to do, you know. First of all, my family and I have a very, very tough relationship, you know, a very strange relationship, mom, dad, and this and that and the other. And I've never really talked God to him, you know, and now all of a sudden I'm going to go there and bring up the whole God thing. That would have, it says right here, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and other people about us. You know, that would have done absolutely nothing. That would have hurt my chances to try to be of service, to try to be a son. Now, 34 years, you know, I'm finally going to man up and be a son, you know. And there were a lot of people, too, some people who I had to make amends to, some of my coworkers, who it was very, very hard. Just like it talks about, you know, it's harder to go to an enemy than to somebody you know. And it was very hard to go to somebody on my job site, a gentleman that I had, I made him have a mental breakdown on the job site. And I thought it was fun at first, you know, seeing a grown man cry and getting his truck and tear out the parking lot. That was fun for me. But, you know, after when I got to this point, I started feeling really bad about it. And he was on my amends list. And I had to track him down. And I had to go to him. And he wouldn't come out of his house. You know, he's got a wife. He's in his 30s, he has a wife and a little daughter who's probably 10 years old, and he did not want to come out of his house for good reasons. So I had to sit there in front of the family and make these amends to him. And that was one of the most difficult things I have ever done in my entire life. And you know, I left his house and I'm driving down the road, and I felt like a ton of bricks had been lifted off my chest. I didn't feel good, but I felt it was something that I had to do, and I did it. And, you know, I could breathe. I could breathe a little bit easier after doing that. So, that's all I got.
Thank you. I'm going to continue on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be that he has done more harm to us than we have done him, and though we may have acquainted ourselves with a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our own faults. Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feelings and expressing our regret. That's it, Harmony.
One of my problems is that I have a huge ego. And it is definitely better since being in AA, and one of the things that really helped me to become right-sized with my fellows and in my perception of myself was this making amends to people when I didn't want to. And when I didn't think I should, and when I thought I was 100% right. Also, making amends for my part and taking responsibility for my part. And I do not have anybody, or I did not have anybody on my list at the time when my first run of amends that I really, really hated. Like I said, I had a lot of remorse for the things that I had done, and I really wanted to make right a lot of the things that I had done. What became harder is that, like, throughout my sobriety, whenever I would have a negative interaction with somebody or get into it with somebody or have a problem, and then I would have to go back and make amends for whatever bad behavior it was. And one in particular, I had an old timer chide me once in my first 5 years of sobriety. She reprimanded me for something, and I basically said F off. And I did not think too highly of this woman whatsoever, but I still had to go back to her, and I had to say, I'm sorry for my attitude, I'm sorry for my language. And I had to sit there while she basically talked down to me and told me that, no, someday you will learn, and when you get to have as much time as I have, you'll be wonderful and spiritual and all the... And I did sit there through that. Now, there wasn't any huge, miraculous, reparation of that relationship where she became influential in my life later on. It wasn't like that, but... like, I can get chewed out at work and not say anything. And that's one place where you have to learn how to keep your mouth quiet, you know? I can have a disagreement with my husband, and I can keep my mouth quiet. And sometimes. and... Those are skills that I developed from being able to make amends to people and to take responsibility for my side. These are all adult skills. These are all things that are that happen with maturity. And I didn't get any maturity until I came to AA and worked the steps, and it's more specifically the ninth step. I had to learn how to handle my problems and my conflicts with other people with more tact, and to be able to admit my own faults, look people straight in the eye, be a person that has my own identity, my own self, a sense of self, be able to stand firm on what I know I did and take responsibility to other people, and also not become so overly remorseful that you're apologizing to them, but then they're taking care of you. Like, how does that happen? You know, like, what? Like, why am I the one getting hugs and like pats on the head when I'm apologizing to you? You know. Anyway, that's all I have on that one.
Nevertheless, with a person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. You know, right before I sat down and I made this list, my girlfriend and I were at Dairy Queen, and we went to the drive-thru. It was raining, you know, I didn't want to get out in the truck, and so we go to the drive-thru, and I order my little ice cream, and I order her ice cream, and we pull up to the window, and the little kid opens, he's like 17 years old, you know, he opens the window, and I give him the money, and he hands me out the ice cream, and I say, thank you, and he gives me my change, and he slams the window. I didn't like that. And so I threw my ice cream at him. And I storm out the parking lot. And I mean, you know, there was a brief moment there where I got so mad. When I get mad, I clench my teeth real hard and my ears start ringing. And my girlfriend knows when something's about to happen. And the first thing that she said is, don't you think you should call your sponsor? And I was like, yes. So I slam on the brakes and I pulled the truck over and I call him and I told him what happened. And he said, I think you owe that man an apology. And I said, nope, I sure don't, because he didn't say you're welcome. And he said, no, I think you owe that man an apology. And I'm sitting here in the truck and I'm at a crossroads, right? Because I haven't gotten to this part yet. But I know, you know, all my moral and philosophical convictions galore, right? I know that I owe this man an apology, but I'm not going to tell this kid I'm sorry. So I get going down the road a little bit, and I get so angry within the next couple miles, I damn near rip the steering wheel off the truck. And I looked at my girlfriend, and she knows. She's giving me that look, and I'm like, all right, let's do this. So I turn around, and I go back in there, and I go inside, and it's pouring down the rain, and I go inside, and with everything I had, it took me everything I had, and I walked up to him, and I said, listen, man, I'm sorry for throwing that ice cream at you, and that's all I said, and I turned out, and I walked away, and he didn't say anything. He was scared to death. And I walked out, and I called my sponsor back. I said, listen, man, I just went in there, and I said, sorry. But that was, you know, like I shared before, I do not like the sorry thing. You know, I was raised in a family where every time you stepped on somebody else's toe, you say, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I don't like that word. So now I try not to put myself in situations where I have to apologize. You know, I'm a chronic alcoholic. It's going to happen. But I try very hard. And I double think and I triple think sometimes because I still, sometimes to this day, I still react to certain situations. You know, fear causes me to react. And I do, and sometimes now I have to take a step back because I have a very short fuse. Even you know, even with this working relationship I have with God, it is just in me. I have a short fuse, and I take a step back, and I look, and I think, am I placing myself to be of maximum service? Am I gonna screw something up where I can carry a beneficial message? Am I creator of confusion rather than harmony? And a lot of the times, it's yes. And so I will not do those things. I can't do those things, you know. That's not the spiritual way for me to do it. So that's for me, my experience. That's how I look at things. Am I going to have to apologize if I do something? So, thank you.
So we're going to continue on page 77. Under no conditions do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell them that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he must do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own, and if our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault, so feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. Harmony?
I have to make sure that my side of the street is clean, and I did not have that the overwhelming sense that God was working in my life until I got to the night stuff. I saw some of it, some little glimpses, some God shots here and there in early sobriety, but the profound spiritual experience came after I did my amends and talked to the people that I needed to talk to, many of which were my family members, and admitted my own faults without listing or commenting on any of my grievances against them, and not even hinting that, well, you made me angry when you did blah, 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 so I'm sorry. I didn't even hint as to what they might have done to me, and that was because I had a lot of help from a sponsor before I did any amends, and I still do. I like to run, and I did run my 8-step list by my sponsor, and I would discuss the things I thought about saying, and then she said, no, this is what you will say. And there was a family that basically took me in as their own daughter when I was first into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was really close with them for about 7 or 8 years into early sobriety, and the wife drank again, and one of the episodes where she was drinking and out there, she was driving around with their young daughter in the car, and I busted her on it, and I had a ton of resentment and hard time with this woman after she drank, and she was just really, really crazy to me, and we had to sit down and have an amends after she got back into the program and went through the steps again, and so when she was about 2 years sober again, we sat down. I was about 10 years sober, and my amends was really, really clean, really, you know, really clean of like, I'm really sorry. Like, you know, I'm sorry that I wasn't, some of the times, even if you're in AA, like you're so close to a person that's gone out, you can't be of any help to them. Like it was really, because I was so close, it was like being with a family member. So there wasn't a lot of, like, I couldn't be emotionally detached from this alcoholic who had drank. So, I owed her amends for I was unable to show up for her in the way that an AA member should because of how emotionally attached I was. And so I made those amends, and I told her, you know, like if I had been a more capable or a more spiritual person, you know, I should have been able to help you get to meetings and do all those sort of things. And I'm sorry that I wasn't there for you, and I was sorry that I was angry. And, her amends were, yeah, Harmony, you are horrible, and like, all my friends abandoned me after I drank, and blah 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 blah. Like, but I can tell you that after that experience, that little meeting for coffee, like my anger was gone. It had completely dissipated, and there was such a profound spiritual experience from it that it trickled over into my own relationship with my mom, and I cannot explain it. But for 10 years, I prayed daily, and especially after I got off the phone with my mom, to accept my mom for how she was, because I really, like, she really irritated me, and to have a to God to give me the ability to like love my mom and to be a good daughter and to, you know, like relieve my resentment against my mom. And I prayed about that a lot for 10 years. And for some reason, after this amends with this other woman who was like a mother figure to me, that like wasn't even a perfect amends situation. Like next thing, like the anger for my mom was almost gone as well. Like I had a few, she would get under my skin a little bit here and there, but there was no longer any blow-ups. I was no longer having to just act as if. I spent a lot of years just acting as a daughter, I think I thought a good daughter would, without any of the warm, fuzzy feelings. And I don't know how or why it happened, but after this situation, it was like God hit me with a magic wand. It was like, ding, and I didn't have to fake it anymore. Like, I loved having my mom around. My mom lived with me for 6 months, and it wasn't annoying. I wanted her to stay. I had to tell her to leave because my marriage was gonna. Because my husband couldn't take it anymore. But I wanted her to stay, those are things that is a situation that I absolutely cannot explain. It should not have happened just from this one amend situation.
Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. And that's exactly what I want to do. I want to criticize and I want to argue. At this point, when I'm at this point, I want to point everything out to everybody. Every little thing. You know, because that's what I do. That's what I know how to do. I love, you know, I was an athlete my whole entire life. You know, every sport I played, I was captain of the team. You know, I was super, super, super competitive, and you know, I was on a whole lot of winning teams. You know, I don't know. I always thought it was because of me. You know, I'm such a great leader, but you know, I'm a sore loser and an even sore winner. I can point things out to people, and that's what I like to do. And, you know, again, I'm in construction and I get paid to light fire under people's asses and get guys to produce some good, fast work efficiently and a good product. And I've been doing it for a long time. So, you know, when I go, you know, I got all these things in my mind, you know, for the 4 months before this point, I'm walking around with untreated alcoholism. And that's not good for me. So, you know, I go to mom and dad's house, you know, and I ask them, I make an appointment with mom and dad to show up at their house because they won't let me into their house. The locks are changed. The windows are locked. You know, the garage code's been changed. I can't tell you how many times they finally just took the box off the wall and they can only use a clicker because I used to break in so much, you know, to take what I needed. Full-time job, and I'd blow through my money fast. I get paid on Friday, and here comes Monday, and I got no food, no gas, and no alcohol. So I go to people's houses that I know have it. My sister, my brother-in-law's, mom and dad's house, my neighbors, you know. So people are fed up with me at this point. They're fed up with me. They want nothing to do with me. And now I'm going to sit down with them. I'm supposed to sit down with them, and I'm supposed to say sorry. And this is why I'm sorry, and I will try my best to never let it happen again. And then I have to sit there and I have to shut up and I have to listen to these people tell me what I've been doing wrong for 34 years, and that's not what I want. I want to tell them why I acted like I did, why they caused me to act like I did. And that's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to clean my side of the street. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. And I have no experience with that. Absolutely none. So I'm going to go ahead and pass.
All right, thank you. I'm going to continue on page 78. Most alcoholics owe us money. Or, I'm sorry. I wish. Most alcoholics owe money. It's my own delusion coming up. We do not dodge our creditors, telling them that what we are trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whatever we think, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory that it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor may sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we're afraid to face them. Harmony?
One of the best benefits of step 9 is losing the fear of creditors. Like I was telling y'all, I shoplifted a lot when I was out there drinking, and not even because I needed the stuff. It was really just for the thrill of it. It was like bored in Duluth, Minnesota, and just go to the mall and rip a bunch of people off. And when I did my ninth step and I realized I was going to have to go back to every single one of those stores and pay them back the money, that was extremely daunting, because I was 18, I was a student, and I was barely getting by as it was. There were many long periods of time where I ate peanut butter and jelly and Tina's burritos, microwave burritos, and I did not know where the money was going to come from to pay back some of these people. And my experience is that what would happen is when I had an amends, first of all, I committed to going over my monthly budget with somebody so that they could see. And as part of my monthly budget, there was amends, and I wasn't able to pay an amends every single month, but there were months where I was able to. I taught swim lessons in the summer and I had more income in the summer, and so I would use some of that money to pay people back. And I do not think you should give AA people control of your money. That's not what I'm saying. What I needed was somebody to be accountable to look over it and say, yes, you can pay this. Because I would say, no, I can't. I absolutely cannot pay that. I have to buy cereal. You know, I have to get a bus pass. I cannot pay that in amends. But because I put my faith in somebody else and therefore in God, I would have checks that would just arrive in the mail. And I would have somebody come up to me and say, hey, will you watch my dogs this weekend? I have to go out of town. Hey, will you babysit my daughter? And I would get extra swim lessons, whatever it was. And the money to pay whatever bill I had to pay or whatever amends I had to pay always came. And it is still that way today. I was finding myself being kind of stressed out just a month ago because I did not have the hours as many hours as I needed to pay our bills for February and January, and I was like, I was starting to feel that knot of stress in my belly, and I just prayed. And this is something I learned from doing the ninth step. I prayed and I said, if I don't make enough hours, maybe I'm supposed to go to California and see my mom who's sick. If I do get enough hours, then I get enough hours. And I've been rained on with emails of various jobs of people like, I'm turning down work. And God will always take care of me. Now, does that mean that I run around and be irresponsible and be like, God's taking care of me, I've got this new Prada jacket, like whatever? No, I don't do any, but I try to be accountable for my finances, and I to take care of my responsibilities. And I call creditors. I did call creditors and tell them that I cannot pay you the whole amount. And I was honest, and I said, I can pay you this much every month. And I haven't ever had a creditor that wasn't okay with that arrangement. As long as you're paying something, it'll be fine. Unless it's the IRS, then get a lawyer. So that's all I have to share.
this one was a biggie for me. I had a lot of emergency room visits in my active alcoholism days. In attempts for me to try to regulate and control my drinking, I would walk out on bar tabs and go start a new tab at a different location and do this repeatedly. And all attempts, like I said, I thought that if I walked out of my bar tabs, that these places would get so mad at me, these establishments would get so mad at me, they wouldn't let me back in. But I had been spending so much money over the course of, since I was a kid. I started drinking in the bars when I was 15 or 16 years old, and these places, they know me when I walk in. So I owed a lot of different establishments a lot of money. when it came to writing these lists, making this list, and I didn't realize that on top of owing the bars money, I owed a lot of Virginia Beach Sentara hospitals money too. And I had no idea. My sponsor and I sat down and you know, he got his little fancy calculator out and you know, he says, well, you're going to give this place this much money and this place this much money, and you're going to pay them this much money every week. And I'm like, dang, dude, I got a mortgage payment, I got insurance, I got to eat. What am I going to do? He said, well, you're going to get another job. And I'm like, no, because I work hard 40 hours a week. He said, fine. You said you were willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol. I'm like, shit. All right. So I get another job. And I don't, you know, over the 18 years, you know, since I started in construction, I haven't really had any extra money because I've been spending it all on booze and other things. And I can't pay my own bills. You know, I'm struggling. Some weeks my water shut off. And then I go and get my water turned back on, and then they shut my power off. And this is a recycle over and over and over again. And now I sit down and I'm like, well, now I got to keep my water on. I got to keep my power on. And then I got to pay all these places. I don't know how this is going to happen because I have no idea. The fundamental idea of how to manage my money just isn't there because I'm used to blowing it all at one time. I get $1,000 in my pocket and it's gone 48 hours later. You know, without me spending all my money on booze and other things, I don't realize it, but I'm able to pay these bills. I'm able to pay my bills, and I'm able to pay these people back. And I don't have to work this other job. And I'm like, man, this is awesome. You know, so it starts skimping. And you know, he asked me about once a week, how are those financial amends coming? I'm like, oh, you're doing good. He said, you're a liar. I'm like, well, you know. And he said, man, listen, you don't have to do anything. You asked me for help. And I'm like, okay. You know. So it was difficult at first to get back on my feet. 34 years old, and I finally learned how to manage money. You know, because I had my first business. I had my first business when I was 15 years old. I cut 20 lawns around my neighborhood, and I had a little I had a little ride lawnmower with a tractor on the back and a weed whacker and a rake and a broom, and I cut grass all up and down my neighborhood, and all that money went to alcohol and other things. So right as soon as I started getting money in my pocket, it was gone, and I had no idea how to manage my money. And within a short period of time, following his little chart, it became simpler and simpler and simpler. And then it got to a point where I got all these things paid off, and now I got money in my pocket again. And I'm like, man, this is weird. I'm not used to having a savings account. And it just happened. And the very last sentence, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. And that scared the crap out of me, because that's the last thing I wanted to do. I did not ever want to drink again. And I'm like, all right, let's do this.
Yeah. Thank you. Our last paragraph is going to be on 79. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Come on, man, keep it together. Reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience, we ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything. Harmony?
So I grew up in Duluth, Minnesota, and every time I've been back to Duluth, I've had to be ready to make amends in case I ran into anybody that was on my amends list, and that was a conversation I had with my sponsor often before I went, I would go back to visit. And one of these visits, I was coming home from a meeting, and I saw my prom date walking on the side of the road, and he was a really nice guy. He was a family friend. He was not in my circle of friends, but he was a family friend, and he had asked me to go to prom, and nobody else had asked me, so I said yes. And that poor guy, I was trying really, really hard not to drink, and I was kind of resentful that my pack of drinking buddies didn't invite me to the condo where they were going to have a big party, and I just was a horrible date, very ungrateful, very pissy, and self-centered. And I ended up like leaving him early, and he had planned a really, really nice like dinner, and had been really attentive, and he was just genuinely a nice, normal guy, and exactly the type that I would just like walk all over if given the opportunity. And so I saw him walking on the side of the road, and I was in that car, so it was gonna be very dramatic if I like stopped, and I was like, well, this may be my only chance. I don't have any way to get a hold of him. I don't know how to get a hold of his parents or anything like that. So I did. I just pulled the car over on the side of the road, and I said, you know, Adam, hey, like, and it's just like this kind of awkward moment. But I said, you know, like, I was hoping that I would run into you someday. I was like, I haven't talked to you or seen you for so long. How are you doing? Blah, 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 blah. And you know, just a little bit of chit chatting. Then I said, you know, I just really, really owe you an apology. You didn't know this, but I had a very serious problem with alcohol after not long after we graduated from high school. I ended up getting sober in AA, and I've been sober for however many years, and I just really need to make amends to you for how I treated you during prom. Like, I don't know if you ever even made a second thought about it, but I'm really sorry for how I treated you. And he was really grateful for that. Like, he genuinely was grateful that I acknowledged how horrible I was. And it wasn't this, like, it was, you know, like, I don't talk to him now. Like, we're not even friends on Facebook or anything like that. But like, I stopped the car and I did it, and it was one more thing off of my list. And another one of the great benefits of doing the ninth step is an ability to be frankly honest. And I have found that as a sober person, I have to be honest in all areas of my life. And very honest about who I am, honest about the things that I struggle with, honest about the things that I have done in my past. And I don't have to be scared of any of that. I also don't have to be scared about people's perceptions of me. It's the most important thing is that I am an honest, real human being, and that I continue to try and do the best that I can. One of the other things that this paragraph talks about is that these amends sometimes take innumerable forms, and many of my amends have been what we call the living amends type, where it wasn't going to be enough for me to just go to somebody and have a conversation with them. My behavior had to change. Right after my first son was born, I copped a really huge resentment against men and my husband because I didn't feel like he helped me enough. And I did not like the way the female role changed after you had a kid, and I was irked about it. And so I did make those amends to my husband along the lines of, you know, I'm sorry, I should not have been as angry as I was, blah blah blah. But those behaviors had to change, yeah. And the fault finding and other things along those lines, no matter what he does, had to change. And that is my amends to him. It is not what I said to him. That's all I have to share on that.
I got most of my amends done about 10 to 14 days. I did them very rapidly. The ones that I remembered that made the list. Like Harmony said, there's always going to be others. I spent a lot of time out there doing some unspiritual things to a lot of people. So there's always going to come that day. You know, I realized in those 2 weeks, every time that I looked somebody in the eye and I said I was sorry, I realized what an ungrateful turd I really was for all them years, and it helped. And you know, step 11, you know, this prayer and meditation business. You know, when I wake up in the morning, if I can't figure out which direction to take, it says I ask for an intuitive thought or decision. And that was very, very, very helpful to me, because there was a lot of times where I didn't know. You know, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to wake up. I'm going to walk downstairs. I'm going to let the dogs out. I'm going to make my lunch. I'm going to probably go to Home Depot and then go to work and do work. And I'm going to come home and I'm going to go to a meeting. But somewhere in the mix, I got to find time to make a couple of my last amends. And, you know, that intuitive thought or decision, that time, that couple minutes I take in the morning to, you know, that peace time, I call it. That was what got me through that beginning. Because like I said, I'll say it again, I do not like saying sorry. And it was something that I had to do. We may lose a position, reputation, or face jail. None of those things scared me. None of them. You know, I'm a construction worker. You know, take my job away. I don't care. There was nothing that I kept secret in all those years. You know, I put everything out there on a plate. I didn't hide anything. There was nothing in my life that I hid. I was a very, very open, man. And jail, what's that? That doesn't scare me. You know, no four-letter words scare me. And now it's not the same. You know, this program has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. You know, like the first thing we read, faith without works is dead. And more works and more works and more works and more works and more faith and more faith. My faith is very strong today. The only reason I'm sober today is by the grace of God. So thank you for letting me come out.
Yeah, man. Thank you. That was great, guys. So we're going to go ahead and pass the baskets around if the home group member can help me out with that. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential on every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And right now I'd like to open up the floor for any AA-related announcements, please. Anybody? All right. Moving right along, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. Also, newcomers, we absolutely like to acknowledge the newcomer here. You guys are very important to us, and we'd just like to acknowledge you guys by first name only if you guys want to raise your hand. Any newcomers out there in the first 30 days? Yep.
I'm Julianne.
Hey, Julianne.
Welcome.
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh, cool. Welcome.
Welcome. Thank you for coming out. Any other newcomers? All right. All right, so we have literature available over on the table over there. The books are for sale. Anything you can fold, you can take. And the sponsorship question here in AA, sponsorship is yours for the asking. We urge you not to delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. All right. If you have any questions about sponsorship, additional information will be available up here. We have a man and a woman from our home group, and it's Jason and Jill will be up here to answer any sponsorship questions. Please ask them anything that you may have. And a few housekeeping reminders. Smokers, please keep the butt can or your butts in the can provided outside. However that works out, you know. What I'm saying, right? And stay away from the front doors. Keep your butts away from the front doors. Also, all our meetings are recorded, and they are available for free on our website at simpleactions.net. Also, you may find a notebook. We're going to start doing email reminders at any special events we're doing. And if you just want to leave your name and email over there by the literature table, we can email you stuff. And hopefully that's out today. So, in closing, can we just thank our panel, David and Harmony? You guys are wonderful. And thank you to all those who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which is held at a wonderful Pancake House International and of types. And they even have stuff like eggs and sausage. And if you really want a sandwich or something, they have that too. But the most important thing is just fellowship, man. Fellowship saved my life in the beginning, and I didn't even know what I was taking part in. So it's not always about the food, guys. If you want to come out, man, we always have a good time. And if we can have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on 164. Yeah.
My name is Brad. I'm an alcoholic.
Brad.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
So we close here with the Lord's Prayer. Keeps us sober.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
That was awesome. I'm so glad about it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, yes, ma'am.